listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skulls in a pool of cerebral spinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Three-dimensional striking. The standing to ground to standing interface. In the classic Star Trek film, The Wrath of Khan, there's a scene in which the Starship Enterprise is engaged in ship-to-ship combat with another Federation starship that's been stolen by the villain of the film, Khan Noomian Singh. Khan initially gets the drop on the Enterprise, severely damaging her with weapons fire before Kirk and the crew realize that this other Federation ship is an enemy, and then get their wits about them in order to try to fight back. They do just that, and part of what they do is to take the fight into a nearby nebula, the composition of which eliminates the ability to use ship's sensors. That means that the only functioning sensors for either starship will be the good old Mark I human eyeball. After the fight resumes in the nebula, Commander Spock makes an important observation to the captain about Khan's tactical style. He's intelligent, but not experienced. His pattern indicates two-dimensional thinking. In this case, Spock meant that Khan thinks about combat movement like the movement of pieces on a chessboard, forward and backward, or side to side, but never up above or down below the surface of the board. Well, of course, in space, there's equal access to movement in all three dimensions, it being space and all. Captain Kirk, immediately understanding the reference to two-dimensional thinking, barks an order to Helmsman Sulu to come to a full stop. This order was quickly followed by another command to move the ship, quote, minus Z, 10,000 meters, close quote. Now, Z refers to the Z-axis, which goes up and down, and separates three-dimensional geometry from the two-dimensional kind. Minus means down instead of up. So Kirk wanted Sulu to immediately drop the ship 10 kilometers straight down. Now, here's a nerd break within this nerd break. In space, there is no real up or down. Those terms originated in the gravity well of our beautiful planet, where down means in the direction of the pull of gravity, and up means the opposite. So, based on the way this maneuver was portrayed in the film, Kirk was using the ship's structure itself as a reference. Well, in any case, the maneuver that Kirk orders is in a plane that Khan doesn't anticipate, and as a result, the Enterprise is able to sneak behind Khan's ship and devastate it with a barrage of photon torpedoes. Now, this concept of limited two-dimensional thinking occurs in the striking martial arts as well. When an opponent kicks at your head, for example, his base leg and groin are open to counterattack. Of course, there's an opportunity for the more mundane, low-line counterkicks, but a completely different approach used by some styles is to drop your entire body to the ground to evade the head kick and attack from there. More importantly, this type of tactic puts you in perhaps the last place that your opponent expected, under him. It's even possible to attack as you drop, either by sweeping the opponent's base leg out from under him, or by firing a side kick up to his groin. The dropping leg sweep, or iron broom, was not legal in point tournaments, but a significant fraction of them did allow attacks to the groin, including the dropping side kick. But despite the fact that I occasionally did compete in point fighting, that fact had little effect on my sparring habits at the academy. I employed lots of techniques in sparring that I would never be allowed to use in competition. To me, sparring was a form of generalized striking laboratory. So long as safety was carefully pursued, anything went. In the mid-1970s, I became obsessed with fighting from the ground for longer sequences, especially against standing opponents. Now, I had a smattering of techniques from Monkey Kung Fu to start with, but after some experimentation, soon realized that I needed much more for a complete game. I learned through experimentation to keep my feet and legs oriented towards my opponent. I adapted many of the various kicks that I had used in my standing game to this new lower position. I explored how I could vary the base that I took up. The base is the ground fighting equivalent of a stance. It can be made up by any of a number of possible combinations of your butt, feet, knees, hands, elbows, or head. This base, on more points than just 2 feet, points out one of the most important features of fighting from the ground. Your base can be much more stable than when you're standing. And even when you do momentarily lose stability, you're so close to the ground that catching yourself to reestablish your base is child's play. As I used to tell my students, you can't fall down when you're already down. Of course, a potential weakness of this method is that movement on the ground is far less intuitive than standing movement. I took this as a challenge and began exploring the different ways that I could move, switching from one base to another, advancing, retreating, circling, regaining standing position, and returning to the ground. I asked my students to attack me any way they could. I quickly learned that being on the ground versus a standing opponent, while not necessarily the ideal situation, did have some advantages. Most martial artists, at least in the 70s and 80s, even experienced ones, had little idea just how to attack me down there. The sparring rules at most academies discouraged kicking below the belt, so it felt awkward and strange to kick down at me. Punching at someone on the ground felt even more strange, and tended to bring your head into the range of the grounded man's kicking attacks. I was pleasantly surprised at how often I was able to score with kicks to the head from the ground, but the major targets still remained the groin and knees. Now, if all this reminds you of the open guard and the Brazilian butt scoot, it is similar. As a matter of fact, I didn't know it, but I was practicing a rudimentary form of the open guard. But keep in mind that this was the period from the mid-70s through the late 90s. Virtually no one, at least in the U.S. at that time, had developed anything that even remotely resembled the requisite skills that exist here today for passing the guard. Or for that matter, even knew what a guard was. But unlike most fighters who use the butt scoot, I was not using the ground solely as a defensive fallback position. On the contrary, I used it aggressively, as a platform from which to attack my opponent from angles he might find awkward to defend. If he retreated, or just stood outside my range, I chased him. This also helped me learn to improve my judgment of distance and timing when the opponent suddenly attacked into my attack with low kicks. I became quite adept at scuttling rapidly across the ground, sometimes evading, sometimes attacking, sometimes simply chasing my opponent around the sparring area, often flowing back and forth from standing to the ground and back to standing as I did so. Now, I'm not claiming to have invented anything new. The group of arts from Southeast Asia called Silat nearly all have a subsystem they call Harimau, which means tiger or panther, in a number of the languages belonging to the Malayo-Polynesian language family. Harimau techniques do pretty much the same things that I've described from my homemade ground fighting system, although I dare say they certainly do it much better than I did. Capoeira, the Brazilian martial art slash performance art, also shares a number of features with Harimau and other ground fighting systems. And of course, I already mentioned Monkey Kung Fu, with which I had been marginally familiar, hence my need for further exploration. In the 1970s, the only knowledge I had of Silat or Capoeira came from a few articles in books and magazines, with very few photographs, and of course, no film or video. And there was no one that I knew of teaching either art in the U.S. at that time. The fact that I figured out most of my homemade ground fighting on my own led to a few conversations like this. "That's a really interesting approach to fighting, Jeff. Who taught you that?" "Well, I started with a few basic kung fu techniques and kind of figured out the rest on my own."
"On your own?"
"Yeah." "Well, then none of those techniques are legitimate."
"Legitimate?"
"Yeah, if you didn't learn them from a real instructor, they're not real techniques."
"Well, they were real enough to keep you running away from me for most of the round."
By the way, this subject of legitimacy and a real technique in the martial arts will be the subject of a future podcast. Now, I'm sure that many of you who are listening think that my foray into striking from the ground was a bit silly. But I assert that I gained a lot of valuable knowledge and some outrageous workouts in the process. Striking skills from the ground can be very useful under certain environmental conditions, most especially when the ground is slippery. The areas of Southeast Asia in which the Harimau subsystem is most heavily practiced get an average of between 100 and 200 inches of rainfall a year. Add to that the fact that these areas have less of their ground surface paved and developed, leading to the potential for vast stretches of slimy, muddy areas compared to here in the U.S., it's easy to understand why such a system of fighting developed. Now, I was not thinking much about grappling when I developed my system of ground fighting. But then in the early 90s, I began training in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I quickly experienced a number of eureka moments when I saw that many of the ways that Jiu-Jitsu players moved on the ground blended easily with the techniques I had developed. Without realizing it, I had been laying some of the groundwork for my Jiu-Jitsu game for the better part of 2 decades. I also came into jiu-jitsu with a working knowledge of a large number of joint locks from other sources. You pick up a lot in 22 years of open-minded exploration. But I had never learned to connect them with movement. Learning the fundamentals of jiu-jitsu was like building a bridge between two favorite islands, making them essentially a single playground. So to me, what many of my contemporaries in the 70s and 80s thought was a silly indulgence, I assert, was good old human curiosity and exploration into three-dimensional thinking and fighting. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or about the Rising Phoenix Academy at my website, rpmartialarts.com.